So we got up to where? Tesvavim and Beis, correct? So let's see if we can do a bit of a chazara on what we did yesterday before we start the new sugya. The new sugya is pretty new. I mean, it's really, it's a sugya about Irani Dachas and so forth. So we're not ready for that yet. You know, that'll be Emir Hashem for tomorrow.
You didn't start already.
No. I wouldn't start with that. You're done. No way. Okay. So yesterday...
We have 2 minutes.
Yesterday we had a discussion about these 6 species of wild animals, right, if you recall. And the Mishnah itself recorded a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. And in the light of this machlokes, we have a shita of the Chachamim that in every single case we require, and there are no exceptions, a din, a bezdin of 23 judges in order to condemn the animal to death. That's what we discussed. Rabbi Eliezer, good morning, was of the opinion that kol hakodem lahardan zacha. And if you recall, yesterday we discussed the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, how to interpret Rabbi Eliezer. According to Reish Lakish, Rabbi Eliezer would only circumvent the need for an actual condemnation and a judgment of a Beis Din of 23. As soon as the animal commits this act of murder, so to speak, killing a person, the animal should be put to death immediately. Now, the person who puts the animal to death, you know, we give him brownie points, he was zocher, but he doesn't get any financial benefits from it. He cannot confiscate the animal and sell its hides. The reason for that is shavinu rabbanon kiman de gomar dinaihu, that the rabbanon consider it as if the shor, I'm sorry, as if the animal, let's call it the ari, the lion, had already been condemned to death. Okay then? So that the din is nigmar dino osbano, that once an animal is guilty of killing a human being, that animal becomes osbano. You can't have any benefits from it. However, according to Reish Lakish, when Rabbi Eliezer gives, you know, brownie points for someone who takes the initiative and he puts the animal to death, he means to say he'll get points up in Shamayim. Right? Zacha b'Shamayim. And the Gemara actually quotes a brisa to support Reish Lakish, and the brisa says, "Kol hakodem laharga zacha behen l'Shamayim." So that's the schus that Rabbi Eliezer had in mind according to Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says that with regard to these animals, there's no bialin. No one could own these animals. We don't trust, we don't believe that anyone under the face of the earth could possibly train these animals and change their very nature to such an extent that they are no longer dangerous animals. And therefore, don't claim ownership on these animals. The halacha will not validate without recognizing a person's claim that he domesticated these animals. They are, by their very essence, their very nature, dangerous animals, and that's the end of the story. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer, we're not going to wait until these animals actually kill someone. That's too dangerous. You know, we're not going to let them run around. We're going to have to immediately put them to death. And now kol hakodem zacha means that we're completely obviating the whole system of the judiciary. And there's no principle here that could apply of nigmar dino aser bana. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we really have a financial incentive for someone to come and break into your cage and kill your lion, because if he does so, you know, he's going to be able to sell on the market at a very high premium the skins, the hides of this lion. You know, people collect the these what do they call them? They make like stuffed What are those things? You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, after your head, you what?
Trophies.
Trophies. So yeah, they make trophies out of it. They put it up on the wall and so forth and so on. Okay. Now, Rashi here, Diba Maskel Yesh on Daf Tesvav Amid Beis, has an interpretation of Reish Lakish, which became very controversial and stimulated quite a bit of debate. And that is that Rashi says that according to Reish Lakish, Yesh Lehem Tarbus, what that means is that according to Reish Lakish, in most cases when a person owns one of these species of belligerent, dangerous animals, he can claim, and the halacha will validate his claim, that he's domesticated them, he's trained them, and he's disciplined them. But if this animal that he claims that he trained broke loose and killed a person, at that point, Nisbarer Hadavar, it became clear that at least this animal was not a Ben Tarbus. That this animal is the exception to the rule, that we were unfortunately, tragically fooled into and duped into believing that this animal was a non-belligerent animal because it was well-trained and well-tamed. And that's where, when it's a little bit too late, but it's not too late to prevent future tragedies, we have to put the animal to death, and we're not going to wait till Beis Din gets around to doing so. That's the view of Rashi. Why did this view of Rashi generate long discussions and objections? The Yad Ramah asks the following question. Rabbi Eliezer says that any animal that kills a person, with the exception of Shar, is kol hakodim lahargan zachar, meaning you can circumvent the judiciary. And the Gemara says later on in the Braisa that Rabbi Eliezer's principle applies to any animal. So it doesn't matter what species of animals you're talking about, it all depends upon whether the animal killed or didn't kill. And therefore, says the Yad Ramah, what happens in the case of a sheep or a goat that kills someone? And we're going to apply Rashi's definition of Nisbarer Hadavar She'enom B'nei Tarbus. It's going to become clear, again posthumously after the victim Nebuch died, that this animal was incapable, was not domesticated. So he says, V'chi ein shum chaya o behema bas tarbus bi'olam el ashar bilvad. It comes out that Rabbi Eliezer, the way Rashi understands it, is going to differentiate between shar and any other animal. And what's he saying, Rabbi Eliezer? He's saying that the only animal on the face of the earth, out of all the species of animals, thank you so much, is going to be the only animal that's going to be tameable, and it's called a bas tarbus, is the shar. Right, because now, according to Rashi, there's absolutely no difference between all the other species of animals and the species of shar. Meaning, shar stands on its own, and the Torah says that you cannot put the shar to death until it's condemned by a Beis Din of 23. And with regard to all the other animals, Reish Lakish, the way Rashi interprets, is going to wait to see whether or not the animal was trained, and how we're going to prove whether the training was successful or not. You remember that phrase, the proof is in the pudding. So we're going to wait and see what happens with this animal. So with regard to all other animals, according to Reish Lakish, we assume that it's a Ben Tarbus, that it was trainable and controllable until we find out tragically to the contrary, and this animal is a lab Ben Tarbus. And that law applies equally to every single species with the exception of a shark. So there's no animal that would be subject, according to this interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer, to adjudication?
Adjudication.
Adjudication in a court of law.
This isn't good dogs?
Dogs and cats? Or the...
Everything. I mean, again, it all depends on whether the animal killed somebody. Mm. And basically every animal, a lion or a cat, you know, from one to the other, we're going to, a lion to a sheep, right? We're always going to assume that the animal is trainable. And therefore I own the animal, and I'm claiming that I domesticated the animal, and it's well under my supervision, my control. Until I'm proven elsewhere. This animal is proven to the contrary that this animal is untainable. You can't train it. You can't control it. Then it comes out that shor is a category unto itself. And in the case of shor, and only in the case of shor, we're going to say that we have to take the shor to Beis Din and condemn the shor to death in 23 judges after the shor killed the person. With regard to every single other species, we don't need Beis Din. Beis Din's not going to get involved because we want shor. If the animal didn't kill anyone, then even a lion is considered a bas tarbus, and we assume it's controllable. And if the animal went out and killed someone, even if it's a measly, meek sheep that killed a human being, we're going to put the sheep to death without Beis Din. The only species, therefore, that's left in the parasha of Chaf Gimel Dayanim is going to only be the shor. Why is the shor any different than all the other species? Meaning, the Adrama assumes that there's got to be an expansion of the category called shor up into a certain point till we get to these six species of very dangerous animals. So what is that distinction? Lefichach, therefore, the Adrama offers a different interpretation. He says that when Rabbi Eliezer says that if they killed, it's called Kodim Largan Zacha, that's because of a different din. That's the din of Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Nosson says you're not allowed to raise a rabid, angry dog in your house because Lotosin Domeve Secha, because the animal might go ahead and kill someone. Ubiarta Rabbi Kirbecha. Get rid of that dog. El Shalagabi Shar. Shahukash Lemisa Sabailim Yesh Lilmod Shanidon Bibezdin Shal Esrim Ushlosha Achlagabi Shar Behemos Vachai, so Rabbi Eliezer, Shein Lilomdo Mishar Ulaficha Kola Kodem Lahargon Zacha. So it means according to Rabbi Eliezer, the way the Ad Ramah interprets it, there's a new hekesh between shor and misas abaylim, which means that we cannot put the shor to death, just like we can't put a human being to death, without the combination of 23 judges. And the other animals, the other species of animals, cannot be derived from shor. And therefore, with regard to other animals, if it's a kelev ra, if we have reason to believe that it's a dangerous animal, which certainly is most profoundly expressed and most clear in the case of these six species, then we don't need the condemnation of Beis Din. We don't need Kimisas Habailim, and there has to be an adjudication of a court of 23 judges. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So we begin to understand, according to the Ad Ramah, what's unique about a shor. That although a shor ostensibly should fit into the category of any other animal, and it all depends upon whether the animal has a propensity to attack a human being, how belligerent, how dangerous is the animal, and here we might distinguish between what we call a kelev ra, which is a dog that's misbehaving, you know, we see how ferocious this dog is, or the six species that are identified by the Rabbi Eliezer, and all the other animals. And we're going to assume that all the other animals, until proven guilty, are innocent. Once they're proven guilty, we'll put them to death without a Beis Din. The shor is different only because of this hekesh that equates misas hashor. Remember the pasuk, it says, hashor yisokel v'gamba olav yumos. And we spent a lot of time understanding and justifying that hekesh. And therefore, kimisa sabaylin kach misa shor, and there's a separate din, a separate requirement of Beis Din. With regard to all the other animals, we're going to have to see. If they're dangerous animals, then we're going to apply the principle of Rabbi Nosson, that when the Torah says l'tasim dom beisecha, it means that a person is not allowed to hold on to these animals. If, on the other hand, he claims that he trained these animals, then the proof will be in the pudding, and we'll wait to see what happens. If, in fact, any one of these animals is responsible for the death of a human being, then kol hakodem zocha, we'll put the animal to death. We can circumvent the need for education in Beis Din, because there's no hekesh except in the case of shor. The Tanakama, the Chachamim hold that the Hekesh to Misas Habaylam is not limited to Shar. Shar is now representative of all animals, all species of animals that roam the earth, and the Torah says L'chol Behem Techa. And that means that the din of all animals is identical with the din of shor. And since the Torah has this hekesh and tells us that shor has to be condemned in front of a beis din like a human being has to be condemned, therefore any animal must be subject to a decision of beis din. You can't just kill an animal. That's the shita of the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar, again, according to the Ad Ramah, has this hekesh, but only with regard to shor. With regard to other animals, we're going to assume, unless we know that it's a very, very ferocious animal, al yigadol adam kelev rabatov beiso, but in terms of putting the animal to death, we're going to have to wait, says Reish Lakish and Rabbi Eliezer, until the animal actually proved itself to be a killer animal.
It seems like the Chachamim are making a big jump to include all.
So that's because of the pasuk.
Seems like it's
what pasuk? The pasuk says in Dvarim Hey, maybe Steve, if you don't mind opening up Dvarim Hey, that's I think in Parshas Vayeschanan when the Torah gives us the mitzvah of Shabbos in the Aseres HaDibros. It says there l'chol behem techa, and in that pasuk it mentions shor. So that on the one hand, the Torah singles out shor and says your shor has to rest on Shabbos. Don't work your shor on Shabbos. And then it says l'chol behem techa for all your animals. So the Gemara in Shabbos has a hekesh between shor and all the other animals. So now we jump from one hekesh to another hekesh.
Why would that include domestic animals then? Shor is more of a.
I guess because the Torah says l'chol behem techa. You know that the Torah went out of its way to equate all the animals. Right. So it says the following. Right. Yom Hashvi'i tasamu atov behem techa. And it says sharcha. So in the same breath, the Torah says sharcha and kol behem techa. So there's no animal that you're allowed to work, if you deliberately work the animal on Shabbos, whatever animal it is. And that comes under what's called shvisas behem techa. And here the Torah went out of its way to equate shar, which is singled out, with all other animals. Now if we combine hekesh number one with hekesh number two, hekesh number one is the parsha of Sokol yisokol ashar v'gam va'olav yumas, correct? And there the Torah establishes a hekesh between misas habaylim and misas ashar, that you need a judgment of 23 judges. Now in that context, the hekesh is about ashar. But if we add another hekesh into the equation, in terms of shvisas behem to b'shabbos, then we can jump from shar to include all animals. So the Chachamim hold that if there's a din of misa b'bezdin shel chaf gimel with regard to shar, then ipso facto we expand that to include all animals. On the other hand, we have the Shita Rabbi Elias, and he limits the hekesh of kemisa sabaylim kach misa shar, the requirement of 23 judges, to shar. He's not going to be willing to go beyond shar. Any other hekesh is in the parasha of Shabbos, not in the parasha of skila, of the death penalty for a shar or for an animal. So therefore, Rabbi Elias is going to postulate a fundamental difference between shar and all other animals. And the Torah requires that Beis Din only in the case of shor. What's the deal with all other animals? So here there are two dinim. One din is an ethical din that comes under the law of lo samad al dam riecho, and you can't have any dangerous animal. I don't care what animal it is. Even if it's a dog, it might be a dangerous rabid dog, and you can't keep such a thing in your possession. Why? Because you never know when it'll get loose and kill somebody. Again, Rabbi Eliezer would identify and single out six particular species that up front you have a moral how should I say, a moral requirement or a demand to make sure that they're not dangerous. So you'll have to domesticate them. And according to Reish Lakish's interpretation, Rabbi Eliezer validates or justifies the possibility of domesticating even the most ferocious of all animals. But we're going to wait and see, and the proof is in the pudding. As we said before, if the animal goes out and kills someone, at that point, all bars are removed. Just kill the animal as soon as you can. Kol HaKodim Zocha. And Kol HaKodim Zocha, according to Reish Lakish, means LaShamayim. And the reason for that is we're not going to allow this man-killing animal to run the streets. You just kill him. And in only one case, the Torah says, and that's called Shar, Kibisus Abaylim, that we require a Bezdin of 23 judges. That's what we have in the Yad Ramah. Now it comes out that according to Rashi, it's crystal clear that Reish Lakish holds Yesh Lahem Tarbus, the Yesh Lahem Baylim, that you're not allowed to kill even a lion that's owned by someone unless the lion has proven himself to be a killer lion. And it would seem from Rashi that even if the training period has not actualized, it hasn't been implemented, Rashi's saying about the species, and that's how Reish Lakish defines the species, is Yesh Lahem Tarbus. Do you see those words in the Gemara on Daf Tesvav and Beis, Yesh Lahem Tarbus? Yesh Lahem Tarbus means they haven't been trained yet, and they're not disciplined yet. But Yesh Lahem Tarbus means Yecholes L'lamdon. There is a possibility of training them. So if you take a lion, does somebody have the right to kill that lion? So certainly if you claim you've domesticated the lion, that's one thing. You know, don't steal my lion. I've domesticated this lion. This is a circus lion, right? But what happens in that period of time between the purchase, when you bought the lion, and you successfully trained the lion? That training period could take years. Who knows how long? Can somebody say, well, I want to kill your lion because right now you haven't trained the lion and the lion is dangerous? So Rashi says, no, you can't kill the lion. Why? Because it's a ben tarbus, yesh lahem tarbus, meaning the potential is there. And we have to allow time to take its course, meaning the bailim who bought this lion, or whatever, they captured the lion, they are given a certain extension of time period to train the lion. And even though right now the lion is really dangerous, it might be a bloodthirsty lion, but nevertheless we can let it go by because the bailim have a period of time in which they will train it, and the lion is trainable. That's called B'nai Tarbus, and therefore Yesh Lahem Baylim. This is the Shita of Rashi. So again, with regard to even the most ferocious of animals, Rashi, Shita, and Reish Lakish is such that we can't kill the animal until the animal kills. Once the animal kills, we just completely circumvent the whole judiciary process, and anyone who gets this mitzvah and kills the animal first is Zocha L'Shamayim. And here the Yad Ramah adds another piece to the puzzle. There will never be, with regard to any other animal, a condemnation in front of a Beis Din. The only animal that the Torah singles out for condemnation in Beis Din of Chav Gimel is the Shor. Rabbeinu Yonah disagrees. Have you heard of Rabbeinu Yonah? Do you remember where he lived? Because the reason I mention is because you could actually visit the streets that he walked on. It's called the Cajal. It's a city in Spain called Girona. And it's really quite an experience to go there. I'm not telling you to get on a plane to Spain, unless you want to claim citizenship. They're offering citizenship for children of the Inquisition. They want to clear their conscience. Anyway, so you can actually visit Girona in Spain. You could see certain tombstones that they found, and they preserve them. There's a museum there, and you could see where the mezuzahs were in Girona, Spain, from 1,000 years ago. And those are the streets, the cobblestone streets that Rabbeinu Yonah walked upon. Rabbeinu Yonah was an amazing personality. He was what you might call an extremist, and that's why he's historically a very colorful, or sometimes a difficult personality to understand. Does anybody know who his main victim was of attack? The Rambam. He was the anti-Rambam guy. And many people say that the reason he wrote the book called Shari Tshuva which is the classic work of all time on tshuva, is because Rabbeinu Yonah did tshuva for his attack against the Rambam. He accused the Rambam of terrible things because, you know, the Rambam wrote a philosophical work based primarily on Aristotle, and that was not acceptable for Rabbeinu Yonah. In any event, Rabbeinu Yonah says the following. How could it possibly be that Reish Lakish, according to Rabbi Eliezer, would allow a person to raise these animals until the point that they actually killed someone? That doesn't make any sense. The animals are not trained. They're wild. Rabbi Eliezer himself goes on record in Masechta Bava Kamma to say the following, Bizman Shehem B'nei Tarbus Eina Mu'adim. In other words, the implication of the language of Rabbi Eliezer is that Rak B'Ofen Shekvar Limdom Shalola Hasik. He's already achieved his goal and he's domesticated these animals, then they're not called Mu'adim. But until he gets to that point, Rabbi Eliezer says they are mu'adim. Mu'adim means it's the natural tendency of this animal to kill. This is the objection that Rabbeinu Yonah raises against Rashi. How could Rashi say, Shalom Alecha Nafshi, which means, you know, Shalom Alecha Nafshi means that I can be complacent because I know that I'm going to eventually succeed in training this animal. In the meantime, you're holding on to a mu'ad because if you haven't yet successfully trained the animal, it's in its present state, by Shavu'ot, it's a very dangerous animal. So it seems that Rabbi Eliezer requires that you already are past the stage of quote-unquote limdom shelo lahazik, and then they're not mu'adim. But up until that point of limdom shelo lahazik, in that pre-training stage, then it's a mu'ad. So Rabbi Yonah says the following. I'm going to just read to you his language. He says, "Afresh lakish niskavein lomar keisha kol zman shalohim misu yeshlem tarbus hainu sheyachol adam lelamdom shalom lahazik v'yim asakein eino rashoy lahargam ach kol zman shalom limdom shalom lahazik afilu imloi misu rashoy adam lahargam." So basically, Rabbeinu Yonah reinterprets the words of Reish Lakish in a way that departs radically from Rashi's interpretation of the words of Reish Lakish. And when Reish Lakish says that they are B'nai Tarbus, he means that now they're B'nai Tarbus. And as we actually believe and we have faith that the training was successful, that this animal is no longer a mu'ad, it's no longer a belligerent animal. But as long as this hasn't happened yet, for Odlo Limdom Shalolaz, he hasn't yet trained them, then even before they kill, you know, Kolakodim Zoch, we have to jump the gun and literally jump the gun and kill the animal. Why? Because right now the animal is not a Ben Tarbus. It's only lends itself potentially to Tarbus, but in actuality the animal is not subdued, and therefore anyone who comes along is allowed to kill it. So meaning the buying of the animal with a commitment to train the animal in these cases of six very dangerous species is not enough to concretize the bylaws. What happens is that when you buy this animal, it means that your purchase in the halachic world is an anticipatory purchase. It's al shema asid. Right now, you don't own the animal. Halachically, the animal, since it's not trained, it's not called a ben tarbus, you don't have bailus on it, and anyone who comes and kills the animal is called a kodem zocha. Your purchase is only meaningful if and when you successfully domesticate the animal. And then we get into this middle stage where this very ferocious animal has been controlled and disciplined. Why do I call that the middle stage? Now we're going to wait and see. Now we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. You claim that you purchased it and you trained it. Let's wait and see, and then we're going to apply the principle of the proof is in the pudding. If the animal goes out and kills someone, then we see that, sorry buddy, you fooled yourself into believing that you trained the animal.
How could you ever purchase a wild animal? Doesn't he have a PU of call it quoted?
I'll give you an example. Let's say you sell me a piece of property, but you say to me, look, Rabbi Berzon, you're a great guy, but right now the sale is frozen, it's suspended. In a month's time or in a year's time, then you will take full possession over the. So your possession in that period of time is sort of up in the air. It's potential, we anticipate that you will eventually concretize your bialis, but in the meantime, it's not really yours. No,
but he is a Jew, has a chiyuv of kol kodem organ zakar. So how can he ever take possession of something?
Because since he's committed to control the animal and discipline the animal, then we don't apply the principle of kol kodem zakar. What was the name, Don, that you mentioned yesterday? Was that famous animal trainer that was killed by the animal?
Clive Beattie.
Clive Beattie. I have to write that down.
I think that was it. Mm-hmm.
Clive? How would you spell his last name?
I pulled it out of my memory bank.
Yeah. Right. How would you spell his last name?
B-E-A-T-T-Y.
Yeah.
Oh, B-E-A-T-T-Y. Okay. B-T. And he was, what, an animal trainer, you would say?
Yeah, specifically lions.
Oh, okay. A lion trainer. Okay. So, Rav Osai, at this point, we're going to start a new sugya, Mimris Hashem. There's a very important Tosus here, Dibra Maskel Rav Yochanan. And I reserve my rights to come back to that Tosus, but I do feel that it's a good time to start a new sugya. So let's again go back to our Mishnah, as we are wont to do, on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. And we're going to see the next part of the Mishnah.
Okay, I was wrong about his death.
Ah, he wasn't killed by a lion?
No, he died of cancer.
Oh.
So I thought the same thing happened to Grizzly Adams.
Okay. So you'll have to give me another example of
1965 he died.
I know there are tragic examples of trainers who were killed.
Yeah. I might have mixed up two things.
He didn't get killed, but he got mauled. He was a Jew. He was a child of the Holocaust.
Who?
Who's that?
Sigmund Roy. He used to have the white tigers.
So he was killed by an animal?
No, he was mauled by a long-term...
Oh, okay. So again, when you figure this out, you'll let me know.
He was Jewish, and he was in the Holocaust, the Shoah, and as a kid, because he knew magic, that was his part of the magic. He would do magic when the Nazis would come into the house or whatever, looking for Jews, and they're hiding in the attic. He would do magic tricks for the other kids to keep them all quiet.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I read in this.
All right. So where are we in the Mishnah? Again, it's hard to count lines here because it's a gigantic Mishnah, but see if you could find a line which starts with a word and two dots after that word called Ushlosha. It's approximately 15 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. And it starts with Ein Danim. That's the Gemara that we want to start with. Ein Danim, we cannot judge. Lo es Hashevet. Right, we have 12 Shvatim, and now we want to judge one of the Shvatim. And we're going to soon see that judgment is for Avodah Zarah. Again, we don't know that yet, so I spill the beans. The Agamar is going to think it's a judgment for violating the Shabbos. So what I told you is going to be the end result. And in this case of a judgment for the Shevet, we need what's called the Sanhedrin Agdola, which is comprised of 71 judges. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, which is the third of the wide lines, he says, Rubo shel shevet she'ovdu avodah zarah b'mezid. The majority of the shevet worshipped avodah zarah b'mezid. So you could have a close call. You could have, like, sometimes the numbers become very close. You have 34 against 33, let's say. So that's a majority of one. But that was amazing. So if you have 34 against 33, that's Avodah Zarah b'mezid. So that's a very dangerous thing. Is that clear?
Yeah.
No. Okay, so maybe I didn't see the latest, but what I saw at 5 a.m. was 34 to 33. But it keeps changing.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so if most of the Shevet worshipped Avodah Zarah, then we judge the Shevet, the entire Shevet, and that's called Ayin Al.
It's his culture. All right.
You finally figured out. All right.
It's too
early in the morning.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I did start a little early today. Next Wednesday's the last one, okay. So let's go now to the Gemara on Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis. And we're looking at the sugya that's about 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Hai Shevet Dechata Bimai. This Shevet, the majority of which sinned, what did they violate? Which sin did they violate that they needed judgment of 71? Elam, if you're going to tell me, B'Shevet Shechilel Es HaShabbos, it means most of the members of that particular tribe violated the Shabbos, and we're going to judge that whole tribe. In a Beis Din of Shiva V'Echad. Now this is a fascinating halacha, because the minority, at least, were guiltless. And it sounds like that there's a din and a condemnation on the entire Shevet. That's a pellet. So the Gemara says, Eimar de palig rachmana, ben yechidim le merubin. The only parsha in the Torah where we find that we're not going to judge each individual unto himself as a yachid, but rather we're going to look at the rove, we're going to look at the majority of some enterprise, some unit, that's only with regard to one specific avera, and that's called avodas kochavim, and the parsha that we're referring to here is called Ir Hanidachas. Ir Hanidachas means a city. The majority of the citizens that live in that city were enticed to worship an idol. So again, if we're dealing with a yachid, an individual, and he worshipped avodah zarah, then that's a general condemnation. What do I mean? We need how do you pronounce the word?
Adjudication
of 23 judges, right? We've established over and over again that 23 judges, which is called Sanhedrin Ketan, is enough to condemn a person to death. So if a person violated Avodah Zarah like any other Isur Misa, any capital crime, we'll judge him in front of 23 judges. When do we shift from the Yachid to the Rabbim, and then we start playing with numbers and see where the majority fell? That's only with regard to an Ir Hanidachas. An Ir Hanidachas means that the city itself became an Oved Avodah Zarah city. And that kind of a judgment, which will require the raising the entire city to the ground and destroying everything in the city, that's Ir Hanidachas, that requires a higher court, not the court that's normally appropriate for condemning a person to death, but rather Shivim V'Echad. It requires a Beis Din HaGadol made up of 71 judges. Shar Mitzvos Mipalik. We don't find anywhere in the Torah, with regard to any other Avera in the Torah, that there's a distinction between the Yachid and the Rabbin. No matter how many people there is, each one is judged individually and in front of a Beis Din of 23 judges. So therefore, I'm going to reject, says the Gemara, your suggestion that we're going to judge the Shevet as a Shevet, because the majority members of the Shevet violated the Shabbos, desecrated the Shabbos. That's not so. Now, how do we know that there is a parsha called Ir Hanidachas? So that's derived from a series of psukim on Daf Tes Zayin. So we're almost there, but we're not yet there. However, with regard to a Yachid, some individual who violated Avodah Zarah, then all we need is a Beis Din of 23 judges. And that's derived from a pasuk in Dvarim Yud-Zayin. It says, Votzeisas ha'ishahu el sha'arecha. And what does el sha'arecha mean? We take him out to the gate. Beis Din she'b'sha'arecha. The gate is symbolic of the place where the Beis Din sat. And which Beis Din sits at the gates of each city? That's the Beis Din of 23 judges. Every city has to be equipped with a Sanhedrin Akhtana. Sanhedrin Gedolah is only one Sanhedrin, one such court in the entire land. But with regard to Sanhedrin Akhtana, every city, again we have to know what constitutes a city, how many people live there to make it into a city. Once it has the status of an ear, then we're required to set up a Beis Din of Esrim V'Shlosha. So when the Torah says, Votzeisas ha'ishahu, you find a person and you try him and condemn him for worshiping Avodah Zarah, and you bring him L'Sharecha, means he's going to be condemned at the Beis Din that sits at the gates. That's the Beis Din of 23 judges. Ella says the Gemara, let's go back to that Mishnah and reinterpret it. B'shevet Shehudach. We're talking about a Shevet that was enticed to worship Avodah Zarah. And that Shevet, that tribe, has the same din, the same status in Allah as an ear, as a city Anidachas. And just like an ear Anidachas is to be condemned in the Bezdin HaGadol, it's the only singular court, the high court that's made up of 71 judges, and they're going to be put to death with what's called Misa Saif, okay, that means beheading. So too, in the case of a Shevet that worshipped Avodah Zarah, the majority of the Shevet was over the Isra Avodah Zarah, then it has the same status as Ir Anidachas. We're going to require a judgment of 71, and we're going to implement the death of Saif. So the Gemara immediately says, "Lememra de bedina de rabim dainina le." Is it really true that we can take an entire shevet and we can judge the entire shevet for worshiping Avodah Zarah in the same way that we would judge an Ir Anidachas that worshiped Avodah Zarah in a Beis Din of Shiva V'Echad? Keman, this doesn't work out according to anybody, because the Braisa, as we're going to learn, records a machlokas between Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan, and none of them would agree that a Shevet could be judged by the laws of Ir Anidachas. Desanya, Loker Rabbi Yoshia, Loker Rabbi Yonasan, Desanya, we learned in the Braisa, Ad Kama Osim Ir Hanidachas. In other words, how many members of the city worshipped an idol, and as a result of these members of the city, the entire city, the ear, has the status of an ear Hanidachas. Me'asara v'ad me'a. Now, before we go on, let's mention that when the Gemara deals with this issue of the number of people who worshipped Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara doesn't seem to raise the question how many people live in the city, so that according to the interpretation of the Gemara that we offered, that Ad Kama Osim Ir Anidachas means how many idol worshippers were in the city, not how many people live in the city, so that we have a problem here. The Gemara of the Pashtus seems to be dealing with a different issue. How many people have to live in the city such that it has the status of a city, it has a shame ear, it qualifies under the category of a city. And then once you determine how many people make up a city, then you could talk about how many people were enticed to worship Avodah Zarah, and the answer would be rov, that most of the members of the city. So for example, if your barest minimum population of a city, as far as halacha is concerned, is 100 people, then if 51 of those 100 people who worship Avodah Zarah, that would make it into an Ir Anidachas. But according to our interpretation, which is, by the way, based on the Rambam I'll mention is in Hilchas Avodas Kochav and Perik Dalet, then the Gemara is addressing an entirely different issue. The Gemara is not addressing how many people make up the city in order for that city to qualify as an ear for Ir Anidachas, but rather how many people actually worshipped Avodah Zarah. I don't know, very difficult. The Minchas Chinuch leaves this as an unanswered question. He doesn't understand how the Rambam could interpret the sugya. The sugya really seems to indicate that we're dealing with how many people live in the city, not how many people worship Avodah Zarah. So let's go on. Now the first opinion that we're going to address here is that of Rav Yoshia. So again, Ad Kama Osim Ir Anidachas Me'asara V'ad Me'a. In other words, we start with 10. Less than 10 is not considered a city, so the barest minimum is 10. Up to 100. What happens if there are more than 100 people that live in this location? That's not called an ear. That's already called a tzibur. That's already a conglomeration of individuals. Ir Anidachas only applies to a city. and is something larger than a city. So anything that's too small to be a city, or anything that's too large and goes beyond the size of a city, according to Rav Oshia, is considered a tzibur or a yachid. Again, the word tzibur in this context means a yachid, meaning it's an amalgamation of individuals. Now, if you're dealing with individuals, how many members of the court are there?
23.
Only in the case of Irani Dachas do we have a judgment in front of Sanhedrin Agdola. This is a little bit counterintuitive. You would think if there's more people in the city, how much more so do we need a high court? But the answer is no, because we don't need a high court, because we're dealing with every individual. So imagine you have a metropolis the size of, I don't know, in my day they used to say New York was a very large city of 8 million, but now they have larger cities, no? What, Tokyo, I don't know what. Right? Let's say a city. So it could be that out of the 9 million people living in a city, let's say 5 out of the 9 million people worship the Avodah Zarah, we're going to have to go one by one through each one of these 5 million people and judge them and condemn them on their own. The din that we condemn an entire city as one unit, and that's taken to the Beis Din HaGadol of 71 judges, that only applies to an ear, which has a population of between 10 and 100. Anything from 10 till 100 and not beyond, and not less than 10, is not an ear. It's just a conglomeration of individuals, and each individual will be judged on his own. Now, when you're judging an individual, the number of judges on the court is 23. Dibrei Rav Yoshi. Rav Yonasan Omer, according to Rav Yonasan, Mimea viadrubo shel shevet. According to Rav Yonasan, what constitutes a city? You have to have a bare minimum of 100 people living in the city. Now, at what point is it too large of a city? It's like a metropolis, and each individual has to be judged on his own for his violation of Avodah Zarah by a Beis Din of 23, that's Rubo Shel Shevet. Now, I'm not sure if Rubo Shel Shevet means that we look at the members of this city, of this metropolis, and see what Shevet they belong to. I don't know, because again, when you say Rubo Shel Shevet, that's a number that will shift and will change depending upon which shevet you are. You know, Levi is a small shevet, but Yisachar is a large shevet, and so forth and so on. But anyway, there's some sort of a calculation that gets you to the majority of a shevet. Once you get to that number, and the members of the city, the population of the city, exceeds beyond that number, then you're already called a tzibur. So there's a double machlokus here between Rav Yonasan and Rav Yoshia. One machlokus is what's the barest minimum number of members of the city in order to constitute an ear? And the other is, what's the maximum number of the city? When does it go beyond the city? And now it's a metropolis, which is called a tzibur. And once again, each individual is going to be judged in a court of 23 on his own. So Rav Yoshia says the minimum is 10, and Rav Yonasan says the minimum is 100. What's the maximum? Rav Yoshia says the maximum is 100, and Rav Yonasan says the maximum is Rubo Shel Shevet. Now the Gemara takes over, and the Gemara says, let's make the following calculation, the following conclusion. Afilu Rav Yonasan lo kamar ela Rubo aval kulo lo. Which means that if an entire Shevet would worship Avodah Zarah, even according to Rav Yonasan, that doesn't give the city a status of an Irani Dachas, such that the members of the city would be judged by 71 and put to death through Sayyid. But rather the din would be a din like Yechidim, of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and the violation and the punishment for an Ovdei Avodah Zarah after he's judged and condemned in a court of 23 judges is Skila. So it means, even if we don't judge in a Beis Din of Shiva V'Echad, and all we have is 23 judges, that's fine. Why? Because they're considered Mu'atim. Mu'atim means each individual is on his own. So now let's go back to our Mishnah. How can you possibly entertain the interpretation of our Mishnah that when it says Ein Donenes Hashevet El Bebezdin Shel Shivim V'Echad, what is that referring to? Because after all, if you have the majority of the Shevet, that comes under the law of Irani Dachas. And if you have the entire Shevet, then according to Rabbi Yonason, that's not an Irani Dachas, that's a conglomeration of individuals. So what we got up to today, Rabbi Osai, is the breakthrough shita here of Rabbi Masna. So tomorrow, B'li Neder, we'll start regular time at 8:30, and we will go over the last piece of Gemara about Rav Yoshi and Rav Yonasan, and then we'll see how Rav Masna is going to add a whole new perspective on this machlokes, and then we'll get back to our Mishnah about Ein Donenes Hashevet El Bebezdin Shel Shimim. Okay then? So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day.
Thank you.
If anybody sees John Bloomberg, just tell him that I have the photocopies for today's Iyun Shir. That's at 10:30. Mirza Shev. Yes. I have to leave myself in the cliffhanger so that I can do my job. Steve, I see you did a great job. Wow. I mean, I need
a
magnifying.
The bigger one is for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to need a magnifying glass.